start our meeting, and I appreciate everyone attending today. We just finished our work session, and you're always welcome to attend those. They start at 3:30 as well. I would like to welcome everyone here, as well as the commissioners. And they tell me I have to use this. Okay. Now can you hear me? Okay, great. I have a pretty loud voice, but I will go ahead and get, except with my mother, who actually needs hearing aids. But other than that, I've got a loud voice. We'd like to welcome and call the meeting to order. All of us, the commissioners, should have had the agenda in front of them, and so we need an approval of the agenda and a motion.
I move.
Okay.
Second.
Okay. The motion has been made and approved and seconded to approve the agenda. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Any abstentions? The motion carries. Also, we've had the minutes that have been sent out by electronic email to you on the February 18th work session that we had, since we did not have a regular commissioner meeting. And so we need, were there any changes to those minutes? If not, I need a motion to approve those minutes, please.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and second to approve the minutes dated February 18th, 2014. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Any abstentions? The motion carries. The chair report is going to be a little short this month because we're going to talk a little bit more in detail about some of the issues that events that we have coming up that I normally talk about. I would like to remind the commissioners and our audience that the June meeting will be a joint meeting with the Clark County Commissioners, and we'll be presenting our annual progress report with them and going over a new presentation that we will be presenting to the community. So everyone's invited, and that's in June. We did a community presentation at Cascade Inn on March 26th, where we discussed a little bit about open to the community of the residents and people that lived within the area that were interested in the Clark County Commission on Aging and Financial Abuse and Elder Abuse. It was well attended. We probably had 30 individuals attend that presentation, and were very welcoming and opening about the Clark County Commission on Aging, as well as learning about financial and elder abuse. This last Friday, April 11th, we had a presentation by Lisa Rasmussen and Karen Wall of our commission made to the leadership of Clark County. And it went extremely well and was well received by the students as well as the faculty there. So I'm very proud to say that we were able to do that this year. And thanks to Lisa and Karen for presenting there. I also spoke and presented on March 19th to the Area Agency on Aging and Disabilities of Southwest Washington. And again, it was well received, and we had a wonderful discussion of how we could partner together to work within our communities to provide services and to relay information to those individuals that need it the most within our community. So those are all the things that have happened in last month. We are in the process of selecting commissioners for the next term. There are 4 vacancies on our commission. We have 11 applications that have come in. We'll be assessing those. The Clark County Commissioners will be assessing those and appointing the 4 individuals. And their term will begin June 1st, just prior to our joint meeting with them in June. Clark County Commission on Aging has also been discussing the implementation of a new work plan, as well as prioritizing projects and workflow. We'll be voting on those next month. We discuss them thoroughly during our work session, and those include 4 key areas, one which is executive committee, advocacy, awareness and education, and project committees, which covers a wide range of specifics within those, including time banking, transportation, universal green design, speakers bureau, and events that will be occurring. Again, we are more doing well with our advocacy role and partnering up with other groups regarding common issues, and we're more than happy to work with those individuals if you'll just let us know. The Communications Committee has done a great job on actually setting up some events, and I'm going to have Lisa and Patty talk about that later on in our meeting. The next Clark County Commission on Aging meeting is the workshop is on 3:30 on May 20th. And then our speaker for that period on our 4:30 meeting is going to be Jay Bloom. And I don't know whether you're familiar with Jay, but Jay was the executive director of the Morrison Center, head of the United Way, Columbia United Way in Portland. And he has a firm now that goes out and does consulting work with the aging communities within the country. He's going to be presenting specifically on action plans for an age-friendly community. And he has already developed two plans. One is for the city of Portland, and another one is for the state of Hawaii. And I told him if he wanted me to go over and do any type of research in Hawaii, I would be happy to sign up for that. But he has not asked me to do so. But he'll be presenting on those, and we'll have copies of the two plans that he has developed. But I think he will be an excellent speaker for us to talk about our community as a whole. So that's the chair report. And we're going to move, and we're ahead of schedule. I'm so impressed here to be able to do this. We have with us, and we're very excited, to have Kevin Gillette with us this afternoon, this evening. Kevin is with the executive director with the Community Housing Resource Center, which is really one of the key strategies that we have within our Aging Readiness Task Force, task plan, I think that's what it's called, to do that. But we're extremely happy to have you with us. And Kevin, I will ask that you just kind of introduce and tell us a little bit more about yourself and do that, and I'll turn it over to you. Thank you so much.
Can you hear me? Oh, it does.
Oh, yes, we can. Works. It does work.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I really appreciate the opportunity. Let me tell you a little bit about the center, about my background a little bit. We are a HUD-certified nonprofit counseling / education center. We don't loan money. We don't approve anybody for anything, any programs, anything like that. We counsel, we educate, and we give advice. My background is 35 years, roughly, in mortgage banking. I've done a little bit of everything under the sun. I've been an area manager over most of Northern Oregon out through the gorge. I've managed individual offices. I've been involved in community development work, and I originated loans all during that 35 years, and I have absolutely nothing to do with the housing crisis. Okay? I did not do those crazy loans where you fog a mirror and you got a loan. I primarily worked with first-time homebuyers over in Portland and in Southwest Washington. Got very involved in the Portland Housing Center and that sort of thing. Came over to the center here in Vancouver almost 9 years ago as program manager, and then became executive director almost 3 years ago. So I want to talk a little bit of kind of what we do, what we're also seeing, especially over the last few years, primarily since 2008, when the housing crisis started. But to kind of put in a nutshell what we do, I'm going to ask for a little audience participation, if you don't mind. So I'm going to ask for some show of hands here. I want to find out where you all learned about personal finance, checking, savings, interest rates, charge cards, car loans, student loans, mortgage loans, that kind of thing. Anybody take a class in school? Raise your hand. We got one, okay? They don't teach it now, for whatever that's worth, okay? Anybody learn from their parents? That can be good or bad. Okay. Anybody really learn by the school of hard knocks or the seat of your pants? Okay. Now, I want real honesty. How many of you have ever made mistakes in your personal financial life? Okay, I'm done. Come down to the center. You need me. You need us. Okay, that's what we do. Okay, we see incredible damage. I've seen thousands of credit reports in my lifetime. I do not see perfect credit reports. It does not happen. Bad things happen to good people. People make mistakes, primarily because they don't know how to handle their personal financial lives. okay? So there's a lot of damage out there that needs to be taken care of. You lose your job, your credit's going to suffer. Your wages drop, your credit's going to suffer. You lose your home, your credit's going to suffer. Okay, what we work with, though, is we try to destroy the myth that most people believe when this happens to them, that it's going to affect them for the rest of their lives. Okay, the things that really happen to you, worst things that happen to you credit-wise in your lifetime, bankruptcy, foreclosure, deed in lieu, short sale, judgments, collections, repossessions, those kind of things. Someone will stay on your credit record for as long as 10 years. People buy homes again 2 to 4 years after these events. Okay, but the real importance of credit and financial stability in your life now, it's much bigger than getting a charge card or buying a car at a decent interest rate or buying a house. It's, the reality is, it's about getting a job. Okay, and that's what's killing this community. It's about what you pay for insurance, on car insurance and that kind of thing. If I go to hire people, if I look to find out anything about you, I can't find out anything about you. If I check your former employers, if I get any information at all, I'm going to maybe get the dates that you worked there and the position you held. But nobody's going to tell me if you were a good worker, if you're eligible for rehire, if you showed up, if you got along with your coworkers or anything like that. So what do employers do? They pull credit reports as a screening tool. It's against the law in this state. Okay? It's against the law in Oregon. Unless the job that you're applying for would have something to do with maybe you have access to personal information of other people or you handle cash. So that's preventing people from getting back in the workforce. That's the work that we do. We help people heal. We give them the tools and we walk with them to deal with these credit issues, to rebound from these horrible things that have happened to them. Okay, to get their credit scores up into the high 600s, low 700s, which opens all doors, regardless of what people's goals are. Okay, we see right now, when I came to the center almost 9 years ago, the only thing that we did primarily was pre-purchase home buyer education and counseling, a little bit of reverse mortgage counseling. We have evolved with the needs of the community. The work that we do in pre-purchase and home buyer education and counseling right now is probably the smallest piece of what we do. We will see about 1,600 people roughly in a year with a staff of 6, of which only 3 of us do counseling and education. 60% of those people are at or below 50% of HUD median income. More and more of them are seniors in their 60s, 70s, and 80s, whose financial lives are in absolute ruin. We've got seniors that are buried in homes that they can't afford. They're underwater. They have extremely high consumer debt. We're seeing people in reverse mortgage default. We're seeing people in mortgage default in their 70s and 80s. They're losing their homes. Where do they go? What affordable housing is out there for them? Okay. The other issue that we face is when I work with people in the generation just above me and everything, and the generations above that, is that they don't tell anybody anything. They don't talk. Their family doesn't know. I literally have had people find out that their parents were losing their home a week from the foreclosure sale date. This is the things that we need to see, that we've got to get the message out, that we're trying to get the message out, that people need to get help, we need to get it early, and how to deal with these things. And that part of the Commission on Aging and everything, again, is becoming more and more. It's, you know, we are seeing every year more and more people, you know, again, 60 and up, that are in these kind of situations, and there's no real answers. We also do, obviously, a lot of mortgage default work. We're working with people. They're just trying to get them in stable financial situations so that they have options in their lives, so they can rent a decent property. They have options in rental and that sort of thing. Whether they buy a home again or not, that's another issue. We also work with the City of Vancouver very closely on a rehabilitation loan program that we do the admin work for, that gives seniors, low-income homeowners, which the dynamic that I see is primarily seniors, that they can get repairs done on their home up to $25,000 in repair work with no monthly payment. It's a simple interest 3% loan, and they pay it off when they either sell their home or they refinance, but it can help them stay in home. Most recent one I have is a good example of what I see. A an elderly couple. The only income they have is about $1,700 a month in Social Security disability. They have done nothing wrong. They don't owe anybody other than their mortgage, and they owe about $63,000 on a mortgage, but their roof's gone. They need help with improvements to their bathroom so that they have issues, so that they can deal with the disability issues. $1,700 a month is going to pay for that. So this program is a perfect fit for them to help on that. There's CDBG home funds. There's plenty of money available out there. Again, a lot of people don't know about it. They usually hear about it when they call, like, the PUD or something like that. So we see the issues that you're dealing with, and it's coming more and more, and I'm sure that you're struggling for answers. God knows I don't know where they are. Yeah.
So the program you were just talking about with the person that's got $1,700 is, and the program before that was where they don't have to make a monthly payment, it's a 3%, and they get it when they sell it. So my curiosity is, they get this program, what was the program?
CDBG/home funds.
Okay. So how do you help them apply for that?
Well, they go through a pre-screening with me. It's based on income, and they got to be in the city of Vancouver, served by the city of Vancouver.
So they can't be in the county?
No. Clark County has a program. If you email me, I can get you a contact for that, but I don't know the specifics of their program. So I don't do the admin work for them.
So you help them with getting qualified, is that
right? Yes, exactly.
And so they pay nothing? Do you get a percentage? Who pays you?
I bill the city out of those same funds for my hourly rate to do the work. We do a pre-screening. I do the loan application. It's basically like applying for a mortgage. It's that same type of documentation. I turn the file over to the city. The city, that's where they do come out and do the inspections. They get bids from approved contractors through the city. And then I actually close the loan.
And they get the work done, they don't pay.
Right.
Until they sell it.
Well, right, no, I
get that. Call it silence.
I get that part. I just, yeah. So how many get approved a year, you think?
We probably do, I'd say maybe 15 a year or something like that.
Is it because of lack that people know, or?
Primarily one of the problems is the fact that you have to have equity in your property based on tax assessed value and what you owe on a mortgage. That's usually the biggest key that I run into on the handicap. There's no equity. They're buried in the mortgage.
Yep.
They are getting, we are looking at some things now in this program with the city that based on need, especially if it's safety, health, those kind of things, that they are making some exceptions from time to time. I've got the ability to make the call that, you know, if somebody's got, I've got an electrical issue, I've got mold, I've got something like that.
Right.
Even though they don't have equity, the income is always the key. There are no exceptions. And they've got to be at 80% or less of HUD median income based on family size in the household.
And what is the median income on that family?
I wish I had those figures. I can get those to you. For a family of, for two, 80% is right around $33,000,
$34,000. Okay.
As I recall.
And if the person owns their home outright, that's not an issue?
No, that's fine.
Okay.
How do you default on a reverse mortgage? Is it that you outlive the equity?
You can't pay the taxes. And even though we've got people defaulting on a reverse mortgage with the taxes have been lowered like to $500 a year. But to give you an example, like you have two people on Social Security, it works. One dies, $500 a year is like $5,000 a year. They also have to keep the property in repair. I used to do the required counseling for them up to about a year ago. And the more I got involved in it, the more I found it really didn't solve many problems. That was the problem. If somebody was using it to enhance their lifestyle, for instance, they owned a house free and clear, they set up the credit line, and I get into it once a year so I go back east to visit my family, yeah, it works. But if you're using it really to try to take care of debt, I found that most of it, when I looked at the budget work, even without a house payment, their income didn't support their lifestyle or their debt. So I haven't done it anymore. There were supposed to be some new underwriting guidelines that were supposed to have gone into effect in January. HUD postponed those. I thought that they were good. I thought that they should have been done. and there's a huge bubble of reverse mortgage defaults that are coming. And even when the normal process counts because of the loss of value of homes, that's why FHA mortgage insurance has skyrocketed on both reverse mortgages and purchase money too. So, yeah.
Is there any program that provides counseling to people considering reverse mortgage? Because I find a lot of seniors are either considering it or their grown children are asking them to consider
right.
it, and I don't know where to send them. You know, I think this is an area where they need good and impartial advice.
The lender has to approve, reverse mortgage lender has to give them a list of 10 HUD-approved counseling agencies. Again, I used to do it. I don't do it anymore. I don't think there's anybody in the general area that does it face-to-face, but they at least have to go through a phone counseling session prior to actually making a loan application.
Why don't you do it anymore?
Part of it is the fact they can't make any money at it. We're a nonprofit. HUD has gotten so restrictive on what we can charge on that or not charge. It's a business decision. And also, philosophically, I'm having issues with it, to be honest with you. I just don't think anymore. Again, out of 10 I do, one made sense. And my job is not to try to, my job is to be very honest with people and show them that, you know, look, you know, you can do all this. We do a budget. Mm-hmm. How are you going to pay these other bills? How are you going to live there if you have the reverse mortgage?
So do you run into any problems with people having houses, a couple, one of the parties falls, breaks her hip, can't come home. Now that person needs to get on Medicaid and they've got one of these loans. Does it, do you ever see where it impedes on what the person that's staying at home in the future gets, or?
Well, I could put it, obviously.
I mean, because if that second person gets Medicaid, you know, and they're getting Social Security, those funds get allocated somewhere else. So what does it do to the person that's at home, I guess is my question.
Well, as long as one of the parties that's on the loan stays in the home, they can stay there forever as long as they pay the taxes, the insurance, and keep the home up. But that's another problem.
Yeah, no, it is.
It's keeping the home up. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Now, I don't see, to be honest with you, I don't see lenders really going after that situation. But I'm seeing more and more of them defaulting on property taxes.
And this question is more related, less to the senior population, but I work a lot with the caregivers of the senior population whose incomes are, you know, relatively low.
Right.
And what I wonder about is if we do a good job of counseling people in regard to what home ownership means, and whether you as an individual have the financial planning skills, the resiliency, the perseverance, I mean, to weather the things that come with home ownership, which is your roof leaks and now you have an unexpected expense or your furnace breaks down, all of those things. And I find that a lot of the younger folks don't understand this part of ownership, and so they get themselves in some bad situations.
When we teach, of course I've been there, okay, we see the mortgage default, and I see that. I see the pain. When I teach a home buyer education class, one of the first things I ask at the start of the class, I said, everybody got to put in your head what your rent payment is, multiply times three. Mm-hmm. How many of you have that in a savings account right now?
That's right.
I very seldom get a hand raised, and I tell them right now, none of you are ready to buy a home.
So, you know, they're still giving home loans on even 0% down, the USDA home loan.
Right.
I mean, those loans are still happening, and I'm...
There are some. VA, there's a 0% down, you know, that kind of thing. It's not a lot. It's not easy to get a mortgage. I mean, not anymore.
Yeah, one of the things is I had a friend that wanted to, her daughter wanted to move from point A to point B and into an apartment. And they were two bedroom apartment, they were wanting like $1,100 a month. We're not talking anything ritzy.
Right.
And I'm thinking, my house payment is lower than that. What stops them from just getting a little starter house like, you know, we all did, you know?
Well, the little starter house right now is $225,000. That's what stops them.
And so it's the
housing has outrun again the affordability factor.
Budget.
Yeah, no, I'm
to have a house.
But I just doesn't, it just doesn't make sense to me. I mean, I get, you know, we all do that. But it doesn't make sense to me that a lender would look at it if they've lived in an apartment complex for 5 years making $1,100 a month payment, never missing a payment, or even some of them are more than that, why they won't even look at it.
Could be any one of a number of factors. I mean, you can have 50% down with a 750 credit score and not get a mortgage. You hear the stories.
Okay.
I mean, I come from the industry. I hear out there, oh, we'll do loans at 580, we'll do loans at 620. Please, somebody show me one.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure somewhere in this country one's been done, but I haven't seen it. Okay, and we talk about that in home buyer education and counseling. I don't own a home anymore. I sold my wife and I sold our home almost 9 years ago. We live debt free. I would never buy a home again unless I hit the lotto and I could write a check for it. Mm-hmm. I hear people in other agencies, Habitat for Humanity, I'm not trying to throw stones, but they act like this is a wealth builder. I hate that term. Talk to the people that bought homes prior to 2008 and ask them if it's a wealth builder. Can you write a check on it? And your house payment may be lower in your rent, but you factor in your repairs, your upkeep, and that kind of stuff. It's a trade-off.
Well, that's if you don't do your own home repairs or keep it up, you know.
Right.
You let it go.
But we talk about that too, the responsibilities of home ownership, and that is done. And it's not. You know, I tell a story about somebody around the corner. I moved in and an old gentleman lived there. He was the first and only owner of the house. You could have eaten off of this backyard. Literally eaten off this backyard. It looked like the greens of Augusta. About 4 years ago, he had a son who moved into assisted living. Young couple bought it. It's the worst house on the block now. And in the backyard, in the middle of the backyard, sitting in the middle of the backyard is a riding lawnmower with grass growing over it. A riding lawnmower. You don't even get out and do that. You know, and it's... We talk about those things, and a lot of classes don't, and people don't understand that. Most of the people, and I'm a firm belief in this area, people at or below 60% of HUD median income should not ever be buying a house. Can you make the numbers work? In some cases, yes, with every bell and whistle and down payment assistance program and everything. Can they stay in that home if anything goes wrong at all? And that's what we teach. You know, home ownership isn't for everybody. Stable, safe housing is.
Right.
You know, and again, as I age, I'm 63, I'm on my 3-year retirement plan. I'm getting tired, I got a bigger yard now, I don't want to mow the lawn anymore. So can I afford to have it done? You know. So we talk about real estate, and home ownership isn't the end all be all. That's the problem we're seeing down in the housing industry. 20-somethings don't care anymore. If you've lost your home to a foreclosure or a short sale, many of those people will never buy again or get into the game. And then here we are back in the affordability issue. One of our real estate agents took one of our clients out, showed three houses, $200,000 homes. You could not live in one of them. They were that thrashed and that torn up. If a home now under $250,000 is priced right, it will go in 24 hours with multiple bids on it.
Yeah, I know that to be true.
Yeah, so that's what we face.
Kevin, talking about, you mentioned affordable housing.
Mm-hmm.
And that is one of the areas that we've been charged to work on and look at and promote and everything. And so I guess I'd kind of like to get your view of the affordable housing in the Vancouver area. And is there some ways that we can increase or promote more of that to go ahead in the community?
Right. I don't pretend to be an expert on this, and I don't think it's just Vancouver. I think certainly the Northwest. I mean, I heard something today. I was telling this, by the way, this is Charlene Dolan, our deputy director. I should have introduced her. I'll pay for that later. But, you know, here's different parts of the country. I just saw today in the newspaper and on TV, Detroit City owns 16,000 homes. Empty homes. They're going through a bid process now, minimum bid $1,000 for a home. Okay? We don't have that. I think the more I see, and I've seen some models or some possible models, the more that there's government intervention when you got to build affordable housing, there isn't anything affordable about it. You know, you've got to find a way to build it without all the bells and whistles and everything. Not that they're not good things, but I also see the fact that developers who get tax breaks and say they're going to build affordable housing and then don't, and they pay nothing for that, and there's no accountability. You know, and there's a model that's being done in Portland now that they're building affordable housing and their apartment units and that kind of stuff without government intervention with it. I think that's what you got to find in my mind. I mean, I'm a baby boomer, we're coming. And the demand for it, I mean, there's, if people are going to write, and most of the thing, and a lot of what I see too, which is very disturbing, when they come to us in Mortgage Default, when a 50-something comes to us in Mortgage Default, by the time they hit us, they've liquidated that 401k to save this house that they owe more than it's worth. And so what are you looking at? You're looking at a retail Social Security to support your lifestyle support in this area. It doesn't do it. So you work till you drop. So,
you know, I hear stories and you see where people, houses are getting foreclosed on. It happened, you know, a lot more. And I know of a person that has lived in a home for 3 years in foreclosure, never made one penny payment. And I'm thinking, how he will come up with a new car? How does he? Why don't they come and kick him out?
We've got a client that just came back to us 5 years without making a payment. Just got the notice of default. Here's the bottom line. I work for banks. I know the economics of this. Okay. If there was money in helping people stay in homes, that's what banks would do. Yeah. It's that simple. There's money in foreclosures and take them back. If they buy banks, mortgage loans are bought, sold, bought, sold. Some of these loans, they pay 10 cents on the dollar. You know, you got banks that have foreclosed property in record numbers this country has never seen since 2008. Have you looked at their profits? Record profits. They paid, Chase has paid $30 billion in fines. And the CEO of Chase got about a 50% pay raise last year. Yep. These guys ought to be indicted. These are the job creators, and they're laying off in record numbers right now. And who do they lay off first? The people in the mortgage departments. That's what they, I mean, we go on and on and on. We have cases that have been open 4 or 5 years with no resolution. Now, there is a trade-off, certainly. Somebody's lived in the property for free and not made a payment. We teach them, hopefully, that they're using the money, paying themselves rent, taking care of consumer debt, building up cash reserves. Many of them are. Many of them are to transition out, and at least they're coming out clean without consumer debt. So, we teach people in these kind of situations to think with their head, not with their heart. Most people think with their heart when they're in those kinds of situations. That's what we do. We're trying to rebuild this community, give people the tools. We're also working with many people that are on assistance programs, Section 8, public housing, that we're working with them through programs to get them off assistance programs so that they're self-sufficient without a voucher. Two of our clients just recently bought the homes they rented from Vancouver Housing Authority. One gentleman, 4.5 years, went from shelter to buying his own home. And these are the kind of things we're trying to do too, because not only is there a demand for housing, but there's a ton of people out there that don't meet the definition of homeless, that are in fact homeless, and need help and need assistance, and there's nowhere to get it because they're not, you know. I recently worked with a client, my daughter works at Crestline. Family of six living in a hotel room for 6 months, and that's not the definition of homeless. They're not homeless. And so they couldn't get in or anything. Thank God we have great partners in this community, much better than is in Portland, and you should be proud of that fact, that I could email Andy Silver at the Council for the Homeless. This is what I've got. We talk on the phone, we get them in the back door, and they rent an apartment within 6 weeks. So we have tremendous partners that work together, in tandem on this. We're very lucky, to be honest with you. I hate to give, you know, just gloom and doom, because we are blessed with people like Council of the Homeless, Salvation Army, SHARE, and these other agencies like that that we can all work together. We see each other all the time. So it's just a matter of picking up the phone or sending a quick email. This is what I got. Can you help?
So you'd said earlier that the county doesn't have the same program that you do.
They have a rehabilitation loan program. I don't know the specifics.
So do they help the homeless in the county the way that you do in the city? Or
the homeless?
Yeah, you were just giving an example. So if that person lived in the county and they came to you, would you still help them?
We would be able to get them to somebody probably, yeah. And we encourage any kind of phone call. They may not fit. We're not the immediate need.
Mm-hmm.
We're the next step.
Right.
Okay? We're working with the jail here. We're working with offenders, current offenders. And on both sides of the river, we work with Coffee Creek Women's Prison down in Wilsonville to help people transition out, hopefully, so that they don't reoffend and start to work with the financial piece, because they're going to have to meet that eventually. And if you've been in prison, guess what?
Mm-hmm.
It's all the credit's destroyed. So we work on those things and work with them to get step by step at a time to give them the tools. We're working with the homeless, the people in transitional housing. Again, ex-offenders, domestic violence survivors, those type of people, to help give them that leg up. Everything we do is free for Washington residents. No charge. With the exception of mortgage default, we do ask that they pay for the credit report, which is, for a single individual, $17 and change and $30 for a couple. And that's all we charge. But all the credit repair work, the credit restoration, the budgeting, the classes, pre-purchase education, and one-on-one counseling, that's all free to Washington residents.
And how are you funded?
Number of sources. If you got your checkbooks, get them out. We get from a number of areas. We've had some United Way funding, county, city, through the state. Washington State Housing Finance Commission has been incredible for us for the mortgage default work that we do and the work we do in pre-purchase and credit work and that kind of thing. So, you know, we're constantly chasing the buck. I'm not going to say we don't. We have a fundraiser you would be all welcome to attend next Wednesday, the 23rd at 7:30. It's a free breakfast. All you got to do is email me. I'll forward it on. She's the boss on that. And you're welcome to come. And we've had an awful lot of support in the community. So.
And Kevin, would you talk a little bit about the mortgage default foreclosure and immediate mediation assistant counseling, what that entails and what it looks like?
I'll tell you a little bit about the process, too. We require that, and if you look on our website, we have our calendar out there. The first step that we require everybody to do is attend one of our orientations. We do those twice a month on the second and fourth Thursday. We put people through a very heavy intake. We see our counselors handle more cases per counselor than any other agency like ours in the state. Normal caseload would be about 40, ours are handling about 90. And we do that because we're basically getting all that paper up front. We can't chase paper. We don't do that. So they come in with a very strong intake with all the financials that we need. And then they get in and we look at options, or are there options? Certainly we use mediation as the tool that they're allowed, that anybody has the right to. But in many cases, mediation, we're just using to buy time. We don't just throw modifications against the wall, see if they stick. There is no rhyme or reason to this. There's no law that makes a bank to do anything at all. It surprises me some who get modification. It surprises me who doesn't. And it's like you hit the lottery if you got one. So the mediation has certainly helped, that law that's almost 3 years old now. In some cases, if it's, we will attend and represent with them if we think they've got a shot at keeping their home. If it's strictly for transition, we will help them prepare and they will have to represent themselves. And we work with two other partners for if there's legal issues or legal help that they need, the volunteer lawyers and Northwest Justice Project for that. But this, you know, we're gonna, again, do an intake with them, sit down. Do you wanna keep the house? What's your goal? Where have you been? What has the lender done or not done for you? And here's what the chances are. The problem is too, as these things go out longer, your chances of getting help to keep that home get less because your loan balance keeps growing.
Mm-hmm.
They got to factor that in. So, it's just, it takes time. Nothing gets solved quickly. Most cases, 40 hours, 50 hours of casework before before we get a resolution. We look at resolution can be foreclosure. Short sale is not an option really anymore because the IRS has implications. So really, it's either foreclosure or do we have a shot at modification? And then afterwards, we continue to work with them to rebuild them, to get them back on their feet credit-wise. Because a lot of times, the credit isn't being reported correctly. After the fact, that in itself, we can help people get credit scores done. It's not unusual. I recently had a client 6 months after the discharge of a Chapter 7 bankruptcy. One of the worst things that can happen to you credit-wise, we had the credit scores high 600s, low 700s within 6 months. We help them rebuild. We can get them a secured credit card with one of our partners. A lot of the people we work with, too, it's a matter of literally just getting a bank account. We can help with that, too. So, but the mortgage process is long. It's drawn out. There is some downtime, but it's constant. You know, we've had clients who submit 12 packages. Nobody ever looks at them. So. We are seeing less. We used to, up until probably about 6 months ago, we were doing these orientations every single week, and we were having a full house of 20 to 25. Now we're seeing that drop down. We're seeing maybe 9 to 12 at each orientation. But I just saw some recent things, roughly in the Southwest Washington, Clark County area, depending on where you're at. Somewhere between 3% and 4% of outstanding mortgage loans are still over 90 days in default. We're not out of this. It's still coming. So. Any other questions? I tend to get up on my soapbox.
Kevin, 5-10 years from now, what's the need going to be for your services?
I think it's always going to be there because I think people don't know about personal financial issues. So the work is always going to be needed. I've been in this kind of business all my life. Hopefully someday they will be teaching this in the schools. And, you know, I think that's the key to all this. Think about, you know, when all of us grew up, we didn't have credit cards, we had layaway. You know, we didn't have anything like that. And now it's beat in your head that you don't have to wait for anything.
Mm-hmm. I guess my assumption is 10 years from now, the need for your service is going to be significantly more.
I think so. Well, I think so. But I think the need for, really, I think especially as the baby boomers come in the Northwest, where in the heck are they going to live? You know, I look at it now, I don't want a mortgage. That's the last thing I want right now. I can at least have some freedom with what I do. And, you know, I can always downsize. I can go, you know, if something changes in my personal life or that kind of thing. So I probably always, you know, even after I retire, I'll be still doing some volunteer work and work part-time. But. Any other questions?
Does anyone in the audience have any questions?
We've got some flyers, my business cards. I describe what we do, but don't, if you think that something even remotely would be connected with what we do, at least give us a call. You will always get a return phone call. That's critical with what we do. It's very important to us that you get a response within at the latest 24 hours. I come from the mortgage business. I'm a big believer in returning phone calls. So even if you think that you know somebody, get them to us. The sooner they get to us, the more options we have. And the mortgage default issue, quite frankly, is a silent problem. It could be happening next door to you. You never know until you see the U-Haul or the notice on the door.
Right.
Again, people don't talk about it, and I understand, so I shut up now.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for that presentation. At this point in time, I'd like to turn it over to Lisa and Patty to talk a little bit about the upcoming events that we have coming for the commissioners that we'll be participating in.
Well, so let's see, we'll go month by month. So in May, we will be at the Senior Plus Expo. We're going to, Jackie is getting us the computer and a screen, and we're going to be able to run the presentation that Karen and I just did. Continual, and there was another presentation we were talking about maybe that we were going to put on there, and I don't remember which one it was. But anyway, So that'll be a lot of fun. Then after that, we have the Recycled Arts Fair, which we did get in graciously. They are not going to charge us. They're going to supply us with a canopy. We're going to be somewhere in the park. We will not be in the parking lot across the street. And we are working with the commission, Arts Commission. We're going to have a couple of projects for everybody to come in and take recycled pieces and make a collage or an art project. Go ahead.
Well, I'm going to add a couple things because they're here and they jog my memory.
You
they're
go
there.
Right.
So we have the Home and Garden Fair and Universal Green Design, am I right? And housing will be there, and that's at the fairgrounds the 25th through the 27th of April. We have the Clark County Fall Prevention Coalition, and they'll be having an event. And I'm pointing at Bob because it's at Touchmark, and that'll be on May 3rd, which I believe is a Saturday, if I got that right. And then Lisa mentioned the 50 plus, which is May 18th. And then June 5th is World Elder Abuse Awareness Day, and there will be an event at the Lupi Center. And I'm sure you'll be reading about that as that gets closer. I think I covered it.
Oh,
what
no.
What day is the Recycle Arts?
It's the last weekend in the month, I believe. But we're also...
This month?
No, June.
Okay.
It's in
we'll
June.
Talk about it.
And we're talking about maybe doing the Flight Up parade, because we had another person do that last year for us, and they had a great response.
This is on the 4th of July.
It is?
Yes.
Oh, that's why I didn't do it then.
Yes.
I'm trying to think if there's anything else. I don't think there's really anything else. We're going to start going back out to all the cities again to give them, to go talk to their council, to give them an update on where we are, and that's after our report comes out. And we have been invited to Amboy's Amboy Days. And then we've been talking with Kimberly at the library to do some stuff out in Battleground in that area too. So that's coming up.
Great. So it sounds like we have a lot coming up with us. Again, I'd like to also say that Friday, the Southwest Elder Abuse Prevention Group
Sweep
is actually going to have a wonderful fundraiser as well, and I think that'll be great as well that Lisa's working with. So.
And
Patty.
Well, you. It's a community event. It'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
So. And then I guess I'll also mention Monday the 21st, there is a complimentary showing of the documentary Jen Silent, which is about LGBTQ seniors and the issues that they face as they age. And that'll be at WSU. The only charge will be $3 for parking. And you can contact me if you have any questions. It's at 3 o'clock.
Super. Thank you very much for those updates. Now I'd like to open it up for public comment. Does anyone have any comments that we'd like to make? We are way ahead of schedule as we sing. Chuck?
Amboy Days?
Yeah.
Territorial Days.
That's not what their council tells me, but it's yeah. And they're going to supply us. All of the cities have said, you know, if you want to come out, you know, whatever. They'll let us have an information table. They don't charge us. They're all about it. Last year, they were all very excited about things coming up. So, yeah.
Great. Any other comments from the commissioners? Super. Can I have a motion to adjourn, please?
I so move.
Second?
Second.
Did you ask for public comment and I missed it?
We did ask for public comment and no one wanted to do it and you missed it. You missed it, Patty. Went right over your head.
Excuse me.
Okay. Thank you so much for attending.
So it's the Monday after? Oh, yeah.
Why do I have it? it in May, Dallin. So it's Monday the 21st.
Jen's silent.